time it's recording. Chloe, a short prayer.
Morning, everybody. I said morning, everybody. Could we just be excused, maybe just for 5-10 minutes, there are some internal matters of the committee that we want to briefly go through, and thereafter we will call you back again. Kashifa, very briefly, could you then, or is it Joy? Joy, can't you come to this desk and just quickly take us through what you need to take us through?
Morning, members. I'm going to be very, very brief. I think that you all have all seen in the media in the past few days the issue around the CGE. So I think, you know, we've had an interview yesterday, one on the day before, on Sunday, and one on, I think it was Monday. So we've been three in the last few days. So basically, you know, I think that the committee needs to begin to look at its stance on this matter, and it really is threatening to become very politically contentious and a red herring issue. So there's a need to be very careful in how we consider the issues and how we proceed from here. So you will all have known that it was a very, I was abroad, so I wasn't here for that meeting with SCOPA, but apparently I hear it was very heated and very interesting. Since then, the CGE has written, I think, to the chairperson, also to the chair of SCOPA, and to a number of other people to say that the issue of placing the CGE under curatorship, which is the stance that SCOPA wanted to take, is an unconstitutional one. And, you know, having looked at the provisions of the Constitution, I think that certainly is the case. And the chair of SCOPA has written back to the CGE in the last 2 days or so to say they take that point. They have to withdraw the suggestion around curatorship, but also putting down very clearly that it's a very serious matter and they will be looking at what other kind of intervention that they can come up with. I've had some talks with some of the, because for a while now, for the past 3 years.
Was that letter unconstitutional? Or the contents of the letter?
The issue of curatorship is unconstitutional, and the reason is that the CGE is an independent body. You cannot do anything that threatens its independence. So if Parliament takes that stance, you threaten the independence of the CGE, and they will take Parliament to the Constitutional Court, which is why I'm saying that the stance of the committee takes needs to be carefully thought out, because there are also other issues. In the time now since SCOPA, civil society organizations have started mobilizing around the issue, and some of them are here today, to say we recognize the CGE is dysfunctional, but if Parliament messes with the Constitution and issues of independence, then there is going to be a war around issues pertaining to the gender machinery. And so, you know, I think that we'll hear from the AG now around some of the issues, but to be aware that we don't even know, we've got this annual report, and from what I've never seen one like it, it's very bad. We've got Jindal saying that he cannot give an opinion on this. So what he's done is say a disclaimer of opinion, which is basically when you don't have sufficient evidence to make an opinion. And the reason for that is that the CGE was not compliant in sharing information with the Auditor General. If we look at some of the statements made, non-compliance with the PFMA, which is very serious, that's grounds for serious intervention. We look at the fact that they're 5.2 million above the allocated expenditure. If we look at the schedule of irregular expenditure on page 48, there's some frightening things there in terms of what has been happening. We look at fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that's also an issue. The bottom line is that there's been no proper financial management system. So you see things happening where there's procurement, say you want to buy something, there's no tender process, there's no invoices, and most importantly, there's no monthly reconciliation. If you're not managing your finances on a month-to-month basis, you're never going to be able to put together a financial statement by the end of the year. So, and we see things like payment of petty cash into staff members' bank accounts and so on, which is highly irregular. There's no proper asset management. There were errors, limitations, omissions identified during the previous audit for 2008 that they didn't fix in this one. They also omitted to disclose material irregular expenditure, which is on page 55, and this includes the expenditure of the irregular expenditure for the former chairperson of Munisa Gaza, around 271,000, which means that there was irregular expenditure and they did not include it. There was an attempt to keep it from the information that went to the Auditor General in this one. Yeah. So if you look at that on page 55, there were attempts to keep some information away. Now, what I'm, for me also, the Auditor General does on page 62, he does a table of what's called key governance responsibilities. So these are things like basics of the PFMA. Did you form an audit committee? Did you assist the AG? And there's something like, I don't know, must be about 20 checks. And there's not one yes. Every single one is no, which, again, is really serious. But the issue today is where to from here. If it's not curatorship, what is it? And just, I'm not sure a member of this committee aware, but I heard a rumor, I don't know how true it is, that part of the reason why this the CGE was transferred from Justice to the Minister of Women and Children is because the CGE tainted their reputation. They were doing so well in terms of how they managed their finances, but the CGE was the one bad apple. So it's come here, and ultimately, if this committee fails to oversee it properly, it becomes a reflection on the committee's ability to oversee the CGE. So basically, there are a number of issues we need to take into account in looking to where do we go from here. The first thing is that the issues are extremely serious, and what are the chances of getting it right within the next financial year? The second thing is that there is a very mobilized civil society sector around this. How do we deal with this in a matter that's sensitive to also hearing voices out there on what their views are? I think it should be an issue that there was a history around the formulation of the gender machinery and the CGE. Those were major victories when this package came together. And this is my own personal thing. I don't really feel that we should scrap it or shut it down without having made an attempt to try and first fix what's broken. And what that means for this committee is if that is the stance, if we want to try and get it right and manage getting it right, it means that you've got a very big job ahead of you, because it doesn't mean you can call the CGE in September when they do their annual report and when they do their strategic plan. It means that you're going to have to call them every 2 months or so to monitor what is the progress, what's been done. I'd like to ask the CGE, what have you done amongst yourselves? Because firstly, and this is stuff that I'm not sure if it's come out, but there's huge politics in the CGE. So the issue between the commissioners and the former chairperson. And what their reasoning is that with the former chairperson, she didn't renew the contract of the chief financial officer. She took that office, the accounting officer, and she merged it with her own office. She then decided to appoint consultants to manage the administrative and financial issues in the CGE. So they were paid, and I don't know how many million it was, but to take on this job. and which is where everything went wrong, because those consultants didn't deliver. This is the ex-chair. So we had this company who were told, develop a financial management system. They didn't, and they got paid big money for that. To the CGE's credit, and I'm aware, they no, they're very reluctant to put the politics into. So they've got that there was a consultancy, but they don't talk to the politics and why it came about. And they're reluctant to bring that into the dirty linen, into the public space. It's a very carefully documented thing to keep out some of the politics. But what they have done is that they've asked for an independent forensic audit. So that was done, and they're paying. So apart from the AG, this matter was referred to the Office of the Public Protector, and he's doing an investigation. But then they also paid somebody to do a forensic audit. Because from where they're sitting right now, they don't even know the full extent. They can't find documentation. They don't know what the situation is. What is disturbing is that the chairperson has now left, and they are waiting to get the report for that they paid for from this independent company. And the former chairperson contacted the company to say, at around Easter time, can you please brief me as to the findings, which they then did. They did a verbal report with her. And the commissioners are up in arms saying, she doesn't work for us anymore. What right have you to go to her and say, this is the findings of the report? So, you know, the politics is still carrying on. There are also issues around, and I'm bringing this into, I was reluctant about whether to say it or not. I'm going to say it. It's not something that will come to you in any other way. The story is that when Umbanisa Gaza, and I don't know whether it's true or not. This is just what they're saying. When Umbanisa Gaza left, when they investigated her irregular expenditure and decided that she should leave, she threatened that she would, if she left, the CGE would close down. And so now there's stories about her husband being politically connected and being connected to the chair of SCOPA. I have no idea how true those issues are, but it does seem that there's some politicking happening under the surface. We don't know to what extent it is happening or not happening. But I do think that there has been a history of tension and conflict that has seriously impacted on everything we see happening. So one of the things about the CGE Act, it says the chairperson is accountable to Parliament. And so what happened is the commissioners could not get her to account to them because she refused. She said, I only account to Parliament. She didn't call one plenary of commissioners in her tenure there. So which means you have to have a plenary of all the commissioners to pass your strategic plan, your budget. None of that happened. She took all the decisions on her own. And what happened with the rest of the commissioners was because they didn't have a plenary where they formally adopted a strategic plan or a budget, they were paid a salary, so some of them decided we'll just do our own thing. It's not official. We don't have an official plan, but we'll do our own thing on the side, do the work.
Maybe we should have had a lengthier time for this. But all I want to know is now that the issue of the curatorship is out, what other option do we have? Because I'm worried that the CGE has been given a budget. Right now, as we speak, they have a budget. And I'm not too sure whether that budget is going to be spent correct. So what is the best? Can you take us through the issue of taking a resolution in the House and moving from there?
Okay, thank you, Jay. I think that ultimately that is a political decision, but they are appearing before SCOPA on Friday again. Now, I'm not sure what SCOPA is thinking in terms of how to of the CGE. So, and I think the committee has been invited to be there. The CGE has now developed what is called a turnaround strategy, which I suggested to them is something that they need to bring to the committee. So it developed a plan, because basically if you don't have a plan as to how you're going to take something from being a big mess into working, the committee needs something on paper to say we have enough trust to continue. So they've put together a plan, and it addresses four issues: financial management, human resource management, governance and business process improvement, and an operational plan. So they've developed it, because the commissioners, because, you know, we've been saying to them, you can't come here and say it's just about the former chairperson. You need to have a solid plan in place in terms of how you're going to change it. So I've looked at some of the issues in the draft plan. It does seem like it might be workable. But I would suggest that the committee then engages with, gets them to present this plan to the committee. And if you then feel that the plan is solid and there's enough substance in it for it to work, we then take it from there. But for me, that would be a next step, is to call them to speak to the, it's called the turnaround strategy. So to get them to speak to their turnaround strategy, and only once we have, we need two things to take a decision. One is the turnaround strategy, and two is the forensic audit results that they've commissioned. We don't yet have that, but I think we need to engage with those documents before a resolution can be taken. So my advice at this point is we're not able to take a resolution until we see the turnaround strategy, which has been developed, and could be presented, but we also need the forensic audit results to look at that, and to then look at how we proceed from here. Either way, it's going to mean that this committee has to include in its committee program a regular item on bringing the CTE in.
Thank you, Chair. I think I agree with you not to move so. this is
Good morning, everybody, once more. Can I welcome everybody to the meeting? And can we also welcome the office of the AG to this meeting? You're all very welcome. And could you then take us through? And can we settle down from the back, please? I know everybody is a bit hungry, but can we quickly grab whatever and take our seats so we can have a bit of order? Thanks. Over to you. But just before we start, could the office of the AG introduce themselves?
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you very much for the invitation to be part of this proceedings today. We hope that we will be able to meet your expectations, and please, as we go along, you know, direct us, you know, if there's any specific information that you need from us. My name is Lauren van Vieren. I'll be the team leader today. On my left-hand side is Mr. Yusuf Ishak. He's currently primarily responsible for the presidency vote, and he was the auditor of the Youth Commission, and he's involved with the National Youth Development Agency. So he will be able to take us through that part of the proceedings. Then next to him is Ms. Trudy Botha. She's currently the auditor in charge of the Commission for Gender and Equality. So she will be taking us through that part of the proceedings. What we would like to do is, we would just like to start off by just quickly maybe giving you some background on
sure, Jefferson. Member, could you also introduce yourself? And can we also understand who else is here in the meeting with us today? Very briefly, let's not take long to do that.
My name is Dorothy Ramudibe, a member of this portfolio committee.
Hartmann Hass, a member of the portfolio committee. Sir, it is.
My name is Grace Becker, a member.
Denise Robinson, member of the portfolio committee.
Denise Kana, member of the committee.
Patty Duncan, member of the portfolio committee.
Do you understand who's here with us?
Thank you. This is Beko Vyoka Kai from the Office of the Speaker, an official.
Mawusiso Bala from PM.
Okay, Mawusiso Bala, PMG.
Marlene Slavis from Ministry of Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities.
Kenny Matala, Honorable Gagana's assistant.
Alupungwandla, committee assistant.
Voices from the Auditor General's Monitoring Unit.
Jackie Adrian's Parliamentary Communication Services.
Oh, I'm Linda Landaba from PMG. I beg your pardon, I'm Linda Landaba from PMG.
Papa Njobani, National Youth Development Agent.
Nelza Ramdala, National Youth Development Agent.
I'm Leonie Caroline, and I'm from the Black Sands.
Karen Benzaev from the Heinrich Boll Foundation.
Karine de Plus, the Independent Newspaper.
Krista Levendel, researcher to the committee.
Kashra Evans, researcher to the committee.
Joy Watson, senior researcher to the committee.
Thank you very much for that. You may proceed.
Good
everything we wanted to give you a short presentation on just what the audit process is and to help you to interpret the audit opinions, you know. It seems like if you've got a bit of a challenge to get it onto the screen. Maybe while we're still trying to sort it out, can I just check, does everyone have a slideshow like this? It says committee presentation and overview on the external audit process. Okay. I will quickly just talk you through some of the important issues and why we believe it's important is we will be dealing with audit reports later on. So hopefully that would help you just to get some kind of understanding of some terminology that we use in the audit report, you know, and maybe a bit understanding of our processes. So, but still, if you're uncertain at any stage about any concepts that we are talking about, you are welcome to please stop us and engage with us on that. The first item is, of course, the reputation promise of the Auditor General. As a Supreme Audit Institution, the Audit General exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in public sector through auditing and thereby building public confidence, also part of the processes which you are actually busy with today then. I think very important for a committee like this is, if we look at page 3, the benefits of external auditing by the Auditor General. The audit reports of the Auditor General add credibility to the information that is provided. So you can rely on the information that you see in the audit report. The audit report assists in strengthening oversight and accountability and governance in public sector. You can use the audit report. The findings through that will clearly indicate to you where is the governance issues, where is the financial management issues, so that all the oversight bodies like a portfolio committee and the SCOPOC can act on that. And it provides insights to facilitate foresight and for decision makers. So you can actually look at some of the findings in the audit report, and those with oversight can actually use that information to make future decisions and give future direction and guidance. And the ultimate goal is to make a difference for the citizens of South Africa. In terms of the auditing concepts, it's very important to understand that there's different kinds of audits. There's what we call a regularity audit, and that audit focuses mainly to present an opinion on the financials statements, and we will later on just quickly discuss the different kinds of opinions that the Auditor General can express on the financial statements. And as part of those regularity audits, there will be a reflection on the controls within an entity, which would enable anyone charged with oversight to be able to understand are those controls effective. If not, what are the problems with those controls so that key decisions can be taken going forward? So the focus during our regularity audits is a lot on good governance practices as well. And, you know, nowadays we hear the word governance a lot, and there might be very difficult definitions of governance, but in short, governance relates to all those controls to make sure that an organization is properly controlled, functions effectively, and has proper financial management. So it's a very, very broad term. Part of that governance process is, for instance, internal audit sections, audit committees, and then, of course, some of the oversight bodies and boards. There's also a focus on value for money, to specific focus areas in our regularity audit. For instance, last year we started off with a horizontal audit on payroll for national and provincial departments. This year there will be a focus throughout all our audits on that, as well as on the procurement processes. So in the 09-10 audit report, you should be able to see the findings on very focused on supply chain management, and also in the general reports which summarizes all the findings. And then, of course, as part of the regularity audit, there's a focus on compliance, compliance with key legislation, mainly the PSMA, Treasury regulations, and then, of course, entity-specific legislation. Like, in, like for instance, in the case of the National Youth Commission, it had a specific piece of legislation which dealt with the National Youth Commission. Then there's a fairly new concept, although it has been for us with a couple of years, and that's the audit of performance information. Now, for oversight mechanisms and bodies like yourself, this is quite an important focus area. What happens is that at some stage you might have a look at the strategic plans of the entities that you have oversight over. In those strategic plans, the entity will indicate what the strategy will be for the next 3 years at least. There must be specific objectives and targets in there. They must be measurable, they must be achievable, and that should be linked to the budget in the end of the day. So when you perform your oversight function, you will be focusing on that first, is the alignment in the strategy, and then is the targets measurable? So the next phase is then for them to actually execute it throughout the financial year, and then in the annual report to report on the performance against predetermined objectives. Now that's becoming very important now. This is a requirement of the public finance management that all entities should report on the performance against predetermined objectives. We followed the phased-in approach in that for the past about 3 years, the Auditor General did some audit work on it, and it was also reported in the audit reports of the different entities. The focus is ultimately to give assurance that whatever is reported there as actual achievement is indeed the actual achievement. So if we can use an example of, let's say for instance there was an objective to build houses, and the target was 100,000 houses, and the entity report in the end of the year we built 110,000 houses. The users of the financial statements and that performance report would like some assurance that yes, indeed, 110,000 houses were built. So there's currently a lot of focus on that, and from your committee side, there will most probably be a lot of focus on that. So if you look at what the Auditor General reports in terms of that, you will find sometimes finding to say that we could not get adequate supporting information to support the actual achievement. That's been something which you will focus on because that will be of concern. Or sometimes we will report to say that an entity is reporting on other achievements there which wasn't actually in the strategic plan, which actually means there was a deviation from what the actual approved strategic plan. Sometimes we will report to say the strategic plan was not approved before the beginning of the financial year. Also very important that should actually be approved at the beginning of the financial year. At this stage we are reporting, we are not expressing opinion, we are giving factual findings in the audit report. And for the 2009-10 year we will be giving a opinion in the management report of the auditees, but still not in the audit report. And then going forward, the idea is that we will actually be giving also an audit opinion on not just factual findings in the audit report. So it's in the development stage, but the information that we do report on in the audit report will be very helpful for oversight committees to take action on. Just bear in mind that there's a difference between audit of performance information and another term that you will hear a lot, performance audits. Performance audit is also audits that the Auditor General conduct in terms of its mandate, but the focus is quite different. Performance audit focuses on what we call the three E's, economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. So there the Auditor General will select a specific focus area. It might be either in a specific entity or it might be transversal. For instance, consultants. There might be a focus on consultants throughout certain national or provincial departments or throughout government, then to determine, the use of the consultants. Is there a proper policy for the use of consultants, and are consultants being used economically, efficiently, and effectively? So that's a different. It's, it's norm, normally not. There's no opinion expressed there, but there's a detailed report where the AG will normally report on the areas of concern. Those are, it's not to say that there will be a performance audit every year at every entity. It's actually on a very selective basis. So you won't often see such a report on a entity. It's on a very selective basis where the AG believes that there is a specific need for such a audit.
Sure, but how often is it done, the performance audit?
The performance audit, like I tried to explain, is it's there's not even a cycle on a specific audit. It's also risk based. Like for instance, in the case of consultants, there's currently transversal performance audits being done on consultants in government because that has been identified as a risk area. So it's currently also very much risk based. And we try to do a lot of transversal ones at this stage. So it's not to say that each entity will in a 5-year cycle be subject to a performance audit. But if there's something specifically in that entity which is a risk area, then it might be selected for a performance audit.
You use the example of housing, and when it comes to the audit information, the performance information audit, you spoke about, you know, quantitative, where do the quality come in? Because when it comes to houses, we have a problem. So where do you look at qualitative? That's what I want to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I think during performance audits, we look at economy, which basically relates to, you know, best value for money. And it can become a risk either if you use the housing example, that you shouldn't build too cheap houses and then they fall apart. So, for instance, during such a performance audit, one of the findings can be that, you know, although it might have been very cheap, it wasn't good quality that was delivered. So currently, I use the housing example, which is not relevant to this institution, but in the housing environment, we are currently focusing, for instance, on not just is a house being delivered, but is it a sustainable house, and is it a quality house, and there's actually been two special reports been issued in the past on that already. And then what we also look at efficiency and effectiveness is to determine ultimately, you know, if the objectives are actually also met in the end of the day. So, like in the housing environment, they definitely focus also just on quality and not just whether it was regular payments that were made in the end of the day. I think if you would just give me a second to quickly what the AG also does is, in terms of its mandate, it can do special investigations. And I think, you know, we might have some discussion today around special investigations. Special investigations is also needs-driven. It's when there's a specific risk that might have to be investigated to determine ultimately, you know, if can be for different reasons. There might be suspicion of fraud, or irregularities in procurement processes. So there's various reasons that can trigger a special investigation. Then the Auditor General can also do what we call factual findings report that sometimes gives donor funding to the AG requires that the Auditor General does specific audit work on the donor fund and then gives a special report on that. The investigations report, they are not necessarily all tabled in Parliament. Once the investigation has been completed, the Auditor General determines whether this is a report that needs to be tabled in Parliament or not. So some of them are just internally reported to the management or the board, but some of them, the Auditor General can make a decision to actually table them in Parliament. So you might sometimes hear in the press about a special investigation being done by the Auditor General, That is not to say that that report will be tabled after completion of the audit general that determines whether there is a need to table it or not. I think, Chairperson, that deals with the main part of the concept. If I can just maybe quickly take you through the audit opinions, because that's quite important, because that's what you currently see in the reports of the Auditor General. I'm here now on page 18 of the slides. There's two reports. The first one is a management report that you sometimes might hear of. Management report is an internal report to management. It's not made public. That report contains a lot of detail. The report that gets made public is the audit report. It gets formally tabled in Parliament in terms of legislation, and only once it has been tabled in Parliament, it becomes a public document. So it's sometimes you will hear that the report that the auditors have signed off on the report, but it's not yet been tabled in Parliament, then you won't have access to it. If you look at page 19, and you will see if you look at the new audit reports that will be coming out, there will be a specific section in that audit report where the Auditor General actually deals with internal control issues, and it will actually highlight and we will actually report if there's any leadership issues, governance issues, or financial management issues. On page 22, we will quickly deal with the actual audit opinions. The first one is called unqualified audit report. Now, an unqualified audit report, that's the ultimate goal. An unqualified audit report with what we say, no other matters. In other words, the Auditor General will purely express an opinion to say financial statements fairly stated. The idea is not to even then have anything in the audit report about findings on performance information. We will report to say we couldn't find the information, or we couldn't substantiate or verify the achievement. So the ultimate goal is a total unqualified audit opinion with no other matters. But then you can get an unqualified opinion with other matters. So we still say financially the institution is sound, but there are other items which we believe is important to report to the stakeholders. Then we get the qualification. Now it's getting worse. This is what we don't want at all. Qualifications are opinions where the Auditor General will say the financial statements are fairly stated except for the following. You know, and that we don't want, that we don't want at all. Then we get to an even worse situation, which is called an adverse opinion. Now, an adverse opinion is when there's a disagreement between what the auditors found during the audit and what management actually represented in the financial statements. So it's a very difficult position to be in for an auditee if you have an adverse opinion, because the Auditor General actually then expressed an opinion which says these financial statements are not fairly stated. So entities should avoid that opinion at all costs. The other one is on page 25. It's what we call a disclaimer of an opinion. Now, a disclaimer of opinion is actually the situation where the Auditor General expresses an opinion, and the wording is, because of the following, I do not express an opinion on these financial statements.
Now, the basis for that is what we call a limitation of scope. We could not get the information to verify the accuracy of the financial statements. Now, that is also a very, very serious situation, and entities should also avoid it at all costs. To recover from a disclaimer or an adverse opinion for an entity is not very easy. It takes a lot of hard work and it takes a lot of time. Okay. Just to let you know that in terms of credibility, there's rigorous quality control processes that the Auditor General follows throughout the audit process. There's a lot of engagement with management through steering committees. There's internal and external quality control processes on the work of the Auditor General to ensure quality. And there's also a process, if you look at page 28 of the slides, that should an entity not agree with the audit report of the Auditor General for some reason, there's a difference of opinion route that can be followed to resolve the differences. Maybe just quickly on page 29 to take you through the responsibilities of management. Management responsibilities to prepare the financial statement, to design, implement, and maintain controls. And you will see that whenever something goes wrong, whenever there's negative reporting in an audit report, it's mainly because some control failed, some control were override by someone, or there was no such control. So the focus is a lot on what we call nowadays key control. Management should select appropriate accounting policies, and very important, management should disclose non-compliance with laws and regulations. It's a responsibility on management to, whenever they haven't complied with applicable law or regulation, to actually disclose it. They cannot hide it. Management should monitor and report on performance information. They must provide access to the auditor to the information, and that's to prevent a situation where we have to report a limitation of scope, which will result in a disclaimer of an audit opinion. And then, very important, management must identify and detect fraud, and they must prevent it at all costs. They must then also account and disclose for related party transactions, and then develop and implement action plans to address audit findings. After an audit, if there were negative audit findings, management should have an action plan developed to address the audit findings to make sure that it does not happen again. And then maybe just to clarify the role of the auditor on page 30, the auditor is independent, and in terms of the current goals of the Auditor General, the auditors must be visible. Our leadership must be visible throughout the audit process at the auditee to make sure that there's adequate engagement and that the auditee understands the risks and understands the controls and understands what needs to be done to get clean audits. We have to, as auditors, determine whether the financial statements are free of material misstatements, and this is a very important concept. When we sign off on the audit report, even if it's an unqualified audit report, a clean audit report, we are not saying that we have checked each and every transaction in that organization. We work in terms of methodology, we work on a risk-based approach, we work on samples, so we are saying it's fairly stated in all material respects. We are not saying we have looked at each and every transaction. We focus on internal control, and we will be reporting if there are deficiencies in internal control, either in a management letter or at a high level in the audit report. And then we will focus on non-compliance with legislation, and if it's material non-compliance with legislation, we will also report on it in the audit report, and you will be able to see it there. And then we focus on performance information, like I've indicated earlier on, and some of the challenges currently with performance information, maybe for your benefit, is that there are not always adequate policies and procedures in institutions to make sure that they properly internally review their performance against their predetermined objectives. There's no policies to guide officials in what kind of information should they keep, how should they keep it, how should they verify it, how should they make sure that they can actually substantiate their actual achievements. And then we try to have our audit reports relevant, and we try to keep the message understandable and simple to the users of the report. We do have to comply with international standards on auditing. That's what the Auditor General has adopted, and also international standards on auditing for supreme audit institutions. That's what the Auditor Generals worldwide use. So we do have to comply with those standards, and that also gives credibility to the audit process. Maybe just in terms of time frames, I think you will mainly deal with audit reports, what we call in terms of the PFMA, in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. So the time frames, therefore, is that all those reports must be signed off by 31 July of any specific year. In terms of the audit process to allow us to get there, we try to finalize all the audits by 30 June, so that July is basically just left for reporting and communication with the audit committees and boards, CEOs, and executives on the audit outcomes. That is on page 31. Maybe just on page 32 for your benefit. After an audit cycle, a PFMA cycle or an MFMA cycle, the Auditor General also then tables in Parliament what is called a general report. That is something that you can really have a look at. It gives you a summary of the findings for that very specific cycle of all the entities that have been audited. And the way it is presented, it will also give you a view of the prior year findings and the current year findings. So you will be able to determine from that whether there were any improvement or not. You will also be able to, maybe to a certain extent, be able to see how is a certain entity doing compared to others, and that the report assists you a lot in making decisions going forward. There's also a focus on what we call root causes. You will hear the word root causes a lot, and you will hear the word key controls a lot. Root causes is just what is really, really the cause of this qualification or disclaimer or negative reporting. What is the real root cause? Is it maybe a capacity issue? Is it a skills issue? Is it a leadership issue? And we will try and define that for you so that you can really understand what the issue is. And in key controls, that's actually what was missing. What control was missing that led to that specific finding of the Auditor General? And we will also try to make sure that from our reports that you will be able to understand what key control was missing. Jefferson, I've said a lot. Maybe I should hand back to you, and then you can ask us some questions on this. And then if you after that, we are prepared then to take you to the two separate reports that you've requested us to discuss with you.
Thank you very much. I think that was the general information that we were given. I'm not sure whether members would want to get into that. I shouldn't think so. Let's just get onto the report, the actual report. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Is there any specific order in which you would like us to deal with it for you? Can we start with anyone?
Which ones do you have there with you? The CGE?
Jefferson, we've got the CGE, and then we have got the National Youth Commission.
Members? Your interest is in the CGE. Okay. Let's start with the CGE then.
I will hand over to Tudi to take you through that. Maybe just important to note,
since we're dealing with two different kinds of entities, just to understand the difference. The CGE is a constitutional institution, Chapter 9 institution, and when we're talking about the Youth Commission or the National Youth Development Agency, which is the new entity that has taken over the Youth Commission, that is a public entity. So if you look at your PFMA, public entities are in the second part of the PFMA, and constitutional institutions are in the first part of the PFMA. A lot of the requirements are however, very similar, but there are here and there some differences. I will ask Ms. Botha to take you through the document that you have there on the CGE, and then after that, you're welcome to ask us questions.
I think there is somebody from the ministry. I believe there is someone from the ministry. Could you just kindly, carefully take note of the report?
Thank you, Jim. I just want to confirm, did everyone receive a handout? It says briefing on the report of the Commission for Gender Equality, because that's a document that I will present. Okay. Perfect. I quickly just want to take you through the content of what I will be explaining. First of all, just a very quick introduction, then just the entity overview, the organizational structure, funding, governance structure, and then a little bit more in terms of the financial statements, and then the audit history. And then finally, just in terms of investigation that's currently being conducted at the Commission for Gender Equality. Basically, as Laurent already said, the Commission for Gender Equality is a constitutional entity. They have their own act, and in terms of their act, they have specific responsibilities in terms of monitoring and evaluating the policies of governance in terms of gender and gender activities. Also, as part of their responsibilities, they need to educate and support and provide information to South Africa in terms of gender. They need to review existing legislation, do investigations in terms of equalities, and also do some research and investigations in terms of gender issues. Very important, the Commission. First of all, they are being led by commissioners, and then that provide for a chairperson, a deputy chair, and in the end also commissioners, to the maximum of 11 commissioners. Underneath, they have the chief executive officer, and then the COO, and then underneath there are a couple of head of divisions in terms of managing specific projects and also finances. Very important, in the past, as we are dealing with the 2007-08 and 2008-09, they received their funding from Justice. You will note that it's not a significant amount, 46 million for last year, and around about 40 million for the previous year. Very important for us, as Lawrence previously also mentioned in his presentation, is we need to look at governance structures, because normally if those structures are not implemented, that leads to qualified or disclaimed audit opinions. First of all, in the past and currently, there's a huge instability in top management, which leads to lack of oversight, direction and monitoring, and also directly resulted in the current financial situation of the CGE. The chair of the commission has been vacant for quite a while. There's currently an acting position, and the chair needs to be appointed by the president. And also the commissioners, there's also some vacant commissioners that also need to be appointed by the president. The CEO's position was also vacant for quite a long period. You'll see I have the dates there. And also, to date, there was various people that acted in that position. Same with the office of the financial, the CFO. He also resigned quite a while ago. And to date, it has not been filled. And it has been, various people also acted in that position. And then lastly, the head of the divisions. There's supposed to be six head of divisions, and also run about since 2007, various people acted in that position. Another concern for us in terms of governance structures is in terms of the audit committee and internal audit. for the past 2 years, there was not an effective audit committee. There was, at this stage, a body, but either no meetings were held, or there was no quorum, or we were never invited to those meetings. The same with internal audit. There was a unit a while ago outsourced, and then the contract came to an end, and they want to renegotiate. In the end, no reports were forthcoming from internal audit. Very important for us, internal audit, need to test and ensure that the internal controls are there, which assist us in the end to say, well, we can rely on all the processes that they have. Then, as part of our report, we reported just on other responsibilities and weaknesses that we have noted at the CGE. First of all, we experienced significant delays during the audit in terms of support of documentation. And as Lawrence previously indicated, that's why we had a disclaimed audit opinion, because we could not management could not provide to us the required documentation for us to be satisfied that the financial statements are fairly presented. Also, the financial statements were not submitted to us within the required time frames. The financial statements that were submitted, there was material audit adjustments that were made. The annual report was submitted to us very late and was also tabled not in the required time frames as per the PFMA. Throughout the audit, due to all the people that were active, key management was not available to assist us with our audit process. Be concerned to us, there are significant deficiencies in the design and implementation of internal control. So total breakdown of controls, it actually goes to the extent, and you'll see also later on our report on the root causes, that there are actually no policies and procedures. There might be here and there some drafts, but no policies and procedures that are implemented and approved. Also, the systems, the financial systems that they use were not appropriate to facilitate in the preparation of the financial statements. Also concerned, no risk assessments was conducted, so they don't have a fraud prevention plan, and the powers and the duties as per the PFMI was not set out. What we try to do is each year, after an audit, we sit with management, we ask them to develop audit action plans that we can see what actions and progress they have made from the previous year. What we also reported that from last year, from the 2007 Act to the 2008-09, none of our recommendations have been implemented. The same findings have again been reported. Also, the information systems to prepare the performance information, that's the part that Lauren speak about the performance audit in terms of their strategy, they did not have, first of all, policies and procedures, and secondly, no systems to facilitate accurate and complete reporting on performance information. And then lastly, there's not a performance management system to ensure that, you know, people that do perform get the recognition thereof, and the other way around, the people that do not perform are not being recognized or being accountable for non-performance. Also, as part of the report that we reported, as other matters of concern, there was major audit adjustments that were not of that unadjusted errors. So the errors that we have identified in the previous year were not corrected. Supply chain management was not implemented, and you also see we reported that there was a significant amount of irregular expenditure at the Commission. No budgetary control and monitoring, significant misstatements and misappropriation of funds, no declaration of interest, and a high number of vacancies and staff turnover at CGE. The next item is just in terms of the financial statements. A little bit more technical is just to explain what basis of accounting there are. In the prior years, they were on the Statement of Generally Accepted Accounting Practices, what we call GAAP, and then also there was 3 GRAP standards that they had to comply with. To continue, as I said, there was a significant amount of irregular expenditure identified. There was the amount that we have identified was almost 50 million. It was identified through our audit processes, and not through management's regular review, and that can be as a result of no policies and procedures and also no internal audit, because normally internal audits will elude management into weaknesses that can result in irregular expenditure. To date, or when the audit was finalized, no action has been taken by management to investigate, to find out what's the reasons, the people that need to be held accountable, and it has not been disclosed in the financial statement. Therefore, we raised that as a separate paragraph in our audit opinion. There was also some fruitless expenditure in terms of penalties paid, amounting to 300,000. If I can take you to page 9, just the audit history and the outcome. As I said previously, there was no improvement from the previous year. We had a disclaimed audit opinion, meaning we could not audit because no information was provided to us to get to a conclusion. There was also some other matters that we reported. Other matters is normally just in terms of compliance and specific items that we just want to report. And that's the first one was that the annual report was not available at the time of the audit. We reported here and there some non-compliances, as well as that there's currently a forensic audit being conducted. But I'll take you through the details a little bit later. In terms of other reporting responsibilities, that's now the performance information. As I said previously, there's a total breakdown in that environment as well. No quarterly reporting was submitted. The performance information was not received in time. And in the end, actually what happened is that we could not audit the performance information. What that means is whatever is presented in the annual report, we can't guarantee or give any satisfaction or indication that did they really achieve the target, yes or no, because it was not submitted to us. Some of the root causes that we have identified that resulted in the current situation is just some extra ones. First of all, that the accounting officer does not exercise his oversight and responsibilities over the financial reporting. Human resources policies do not facilitate effective recruitment, training, discipline, and supervision of personnel. The information that need to be captured on a daily basis are not being captured, so that resulted in either a backlog. Management has not specified a reporting objective to enable the identification of risk. All the controls, manual controls and automated controls, are not designed to ensure complete accurate financial reporting. Policies and procedures are not designed and implemented. And very important, that the report, the reviewing and monitoring that should take place on a daily basis did not take place. There's currently investigation being conducted between the Office of the Auditor General as well as the Office of the Public Protector. The investigation is still in the process. The final report has been issued to management. We are just waiting for final management comments, where we will evaluate the comments to see, well, is certain of the findings resolved, or are there extra items that we need to maybe look into? And once we have that, the report will be finalized, and then based on the decision of the Auditor General, it might be tabled in Parliament as a separate report. And that concludes my overview on the Commission for Gender Equality. Any questions or any extra clarifications required, any specific needs that you need to or want to ask?
Member, here is the report. Perhaps let me just ask this. You know, out of the reports that you have given us, and I think I'm asking this from a lay point of you know, how does it happen that after all this mess that you have given us, how does it happen that the CGE again is given a budget, you know? How does it happen? I don't know whether you're the right person to tell me that, but, I mean, what is your opinion on that?
Jefferson, I'll try to explain to you. The CGE is a constitutional institution, so its existence is embedded in the constitution. There's a requirement in the Public Finance Management Act that entities that do get their funding, and like in the case of a constitutional institution, it also gets its funding through a national department. But there's a specific section in it's section 38(1)(j) of the Public Finance Management Act. Now that section deals with controlling of funds that flows through a national department to another entity. But that section specifically excludes transfers to a constitutional institution. And the reason for that is it's a constitutional institution. It's constitutionally independent. So strictly speaking, I don't think the funding can be cut off at this stage. It's rather the governance processes that should now be put into place to get the constitutional institution at the point, you know, where the finances are properly controlled, proper financial management, and all those processes. I think it's going to be very difficult to just cut off funding, because in terms of the constitution, the entity must be there and it must fulfill a constitutional mandate. In the case of 3A entities, you will see there's a requirement that before funds are transferred, that entity should give a certificate to the transferring department to say, we do have proper controls in place. Now, if that certificate cannot be provided by the entity, then the transferring department should still transfer, but subject to specific requirements and conditions set by the transferring department. So there would be a bit more control there in terms of then transferring the funds. And if you're actually not allowed to transfer before you've got those processes in place. So there it can be controlled a bit easier. But in the case of a constitutional institution, it's a bit more difficult.
So it actually ties our hands. I mean, they are independent, which is good for them to keep an eye on us and other entities as well. But not good enough. You know, the way they were working, the CGE, their design was actually designed for open callousness, you know, the way they were functioning. I can hand over to members. Honorable Duncan, Honorable Kekane, Honorable Marcus, please just be brief and straight to the point so we don't take much time.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask the auditor team that we have here. These audits are done once a year. Now, since the CGE received a disclaimer of opinion in 07-08, what intervention, if the Auditor General Department can do it, what intervention were undertaken by to intervene within the next year, halfway, instead of waiting another year? Because I would want to believe that giving the CGE in 07-08 a disclaimer of opinion, it would have been great if the Auditor General would intervene halfway or even quarterly to just check on whether they are now complying with the, for instance, the areas where the Auditor General gave specific ideas or not ideas, specifics to the CGE that they must correct. Thank you.
Jefferson, my colleague can give you some more detail.
Can I just disturb you a bit? Can we first take the three questions? You know, I think it will help us a bit to do it in that fashion.
Yeah, a similar question. When you explain how the auditor works, you said that there's management, I mean, they check on management of financial controls. And the similar question is that there was a disclaimer, not this time, the previous year. And now at least you've got, you said there's an investigation conducting, some investigation to check what is wrong. Why didn't you institute this investigation then? Secondly, the internal auditors, what do they actually do? I mean, are they not there to check every month that financial management is there? I mean, what is their job? The general question is that, I mean, this is, the wrong things have been happening, but it seems even from the Auditor General side, there were no steps taken on monthly basis or on yearly basis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether I'm asking the question to the correct person. Because when you look at this report, a person can see when it comes to the PFMA, even looking at Section 38, that they flouted there was non-compliance to the section itself. And now what's interesting, when we sat in the score committee, because charges have to be brought against whoever was the chairperson, accounting officer, whoever was the accounting officer, if we not say chairperson. But in that meeting, they said to us, the previous chairperson, or the chairperson that was, I don't know what, out for fired, or what happened to the chairperson, because I'm new here. She said she has litigation against the CGE. Now, how do you look at that aspect? Because it's floating on the one side, and the next side, the same person is bringing litigation against the CGE. That's all.
Thank you. I will start off and then I will hand over to Tudy just to assist me in some areas. I think maybe if I can start off with the last question. I think maybe we can't really comment on that because that's a process which we are not part of at this stage, you know. So we are aware that there are legal processes going on. We don't have any information on that. Those are internal processes between the parties. So we can at this stage not comment on that at all. The question by the member about the investigations, why wasn't it done earlier? Ms. Bertok can help me out if she's got other information. But I think the principle is not that always in cases where there's a disclaimer that it investigation will follow. Remember, a disclaimer is based on we did not have adequate information supporting the amount in the financial statements. So an investigation will only be conducted at a point where other information comes to our notice which indicates that there might have been something else wrong. There might have been irregularities, or there might have been fraud, or there might have been other serious issues that need to be investigated further through other processes than a normal audit process. So it's not always in the case of where there's a disclaimer that we will do special investigations. I think on the role of internal audit, that is exactly what we are reporting. We are saying that internal audit did not function. Now, internal audit is a very important part of ensuring good governance. Internal audit, I always say, they should sweep ahead. If you look at internal audit is required, first of all, in terms of the PFMA, each entity should have an internal audit section which is controlled and directed by an audit committee. Now, you will see we are also reporting to say that the audit committee wasn't effective and it wasn't there for a large part of the period under review. So can you see how the governance structures are
if they are not there and they are not operating effectively, that you then sit with a situation like this. So it's very important. Internal audit should be functioning on a daily basis. Internal audit should be rising, and internal audit's focus is first of all also risk-based, and secondly a lot on the controls in the specific environment. So the internal auditors should first raise the red flag to say there are no controls, controls are not functioning, there are no policies and procedures. And then management should act on that, and the audit committee should assist those charged with governance to make sure that proper policies and procedures are put in place and that the necessary action is taken to make sure that the control environment is sound. The CGE is a small entity. So if I remember correctly, we do not do what we call an interim audit there, because it's such a small entity. At our bigger entities, we will do interim audits, and we will have an interim report just to management on our audit findings. But once again, it is actually the role of internal audit to do that, and not the role of external audit to do that. We are, as part of our objective, to play a role, to get better audit outcomes. As far as possible, we do interim audits. But at some of these small entities, some of them actually can't even accommodate us for interim audits, because it also is an extra burden on them, and it is a bit more expensive as well, not that should always be the determining factor, but that is why internal audit has been legislated. They should be on a daily basis, they should know the environment very well, and the governance structures like the audit committee is very, very important. I think there was a question about our interactions. Going forward, we ask entities to develop action plans on how they will address audit findings. And then we will look at if they do implement that plan. But remember, the ultimate responsibility is the responsibility of management and those charged with governance. So we can make the suggestion that you should have an action plan and that they should execute the action plan, but still ultimately responsibility of management to make sure that that is indeed a success, together with those charged with governance. Chairperson, I think I've covered everything. If there's anything that Tudi maybe thinks she wants to add, I think I will allow her to add, and then if you feel we haven't covered anything, you can please just highlight it to us and we will gladly cover it for you.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's very important to remember that we had a disclaimed opinion, so there was no document. So it's not for management to quickly just go and do a recalculation and process the corrections and move on. They basically have to go through all the transactions in their ledger, their financial records, trace it back to reliable source documentation. Linked to that, there were so many people that was acting. They got some documentation, they left. So the people that's currently there don't know, how actually to move forward. And that's actually, as part of our interactions with management on the audit action plan, we have identified that no progress was actually made in terms of the matters that we have reported in the previous year. So there were some elements where we have identified minor miscalculations and so forth, which they managed to correct. But the problem is the source documentation.
Members, I think this office mainly gives us how things should have been done. Things were supposed to be done this way, but they were not done this way, they were done this way. So most of the questions, really, they would not have answers to. Especially in the absence of the document. They did not have information either. So it makes it difficult. I think most of the questions would go to the CGE rather than this office. Maybe we should move along those lines. I wish the AG's office had more powers. Seemingly as it stands, they don't have much powers, you know. But very briefly, Duncan, Honorable Robinson, Honorable Ramudipa.
Thank you, Chair. I think this is should be a relevant question to the panel here. I would like to know what was your or did you give any or raise any opinion on the amount that was allocated to the CGE in 08-09 from the Department of Justice in their report? Did you make that? Do you understand what I mean, hey? Because money went to them 07-08. They got this disclaimer of opinion, and then they gave money again. So what was your opinion on that, as well as Treasury?
Thank you, Chair. Just a point of clarity. You indicated that there was a disclaimer given, and therefore this was the red light to us as Parliament, and the body to which the CGE reported was the Department of Justice. Surely it was their responsibility to follow up with an investigation and say, we see the red lights that you are pointing out, therefore we need to act and call these people in. Am I right in that? And then, if so, why not? Thank you. Perhaps you can't answer the why not either, but just the if so. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
One more question.
Mine is just a small question. Maybe I could have missed.
I'm sorry. I say maybe I could have missed. You know, your addressing this issue as to as auditor. At what point do you really come in to investigate when you continue, you know, coming up with an unqualified report?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the question at what point is quite a difficult question to answer. It depends on the circumstances. Investigations are very costly and take a lot of time. So we've got a process. If there's an allegation or a request for an investigation, we have got a process that we go through to try and determine whether there's indeed valid reasons for an investigation. So there's a specific process that we go through to ensure that we follow due process. Like I've indicated earlier, it's not to say that in all cases where there's a bad audit report that it necessarily warrants a special investigation. So I think that's the best way I can answer that one. On the role of the Department of Justice, and my colleague must help me out, my understanding is that the oversight role has been delegated by the President to the Department of Justice. I think that is what I understand it. But I would suggest that you rather clarify that with the Department of Justice self. How did they see their role? Was it delegated to them? And maybe why didn't they act, or why they feel there was no need to act? That's a bit of a difficult one for us to answer from where we are sitting. If I understood the other question correctly, I think the question, the way I understood it was, if I can just confirm, did we report anything in the Department of Justice on the transfer that was made to CGE? Okay. No, we did not report anything in the Department of Justice, and it's based on the explanation that I gave earlier of Section 38(1)(j), which specifically excludes transfers to a constitutional institution. And that is the reason why. I think one of the members here made a statement to say that there's a view that it's a contravention of Section 38(1)(j), but Section 38(1)(j) specifically excludes transfers in terms of the Division of Revenue Act and transfers to a constitutional institution.
So therefore, there's not the requirement like in the case of the Department of Justice to the CGE to even before a transfer is made get any assurances on controls or effective internal audit or nothing. That's the difference between a other entities and a constitutional institution. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Not a very good report for us, especially as this committee, now that the CGE accounts to this committee. In fact, we had a chance to attend SCOPA meetings, so some of the things we are raising, we are aware of, but we just wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth. I don't think members have much to say after this. Perhaps we could relieve you and say thank you very much. Oh, you still have the other NYDA report. Sorry about that.
That's fine, Jefferson. I will hand over to Mr. Isaac to quickly take you through that one.
Thanks, Jefferson, and honorable members. What you have before you is the NYC briefing document. Very similar to the CGE, and what you will find is that a lot of the issues that we reported now previously on the CGE are actually repeated in this document. The environment that we were auditing was very similar. And through my briefing, I'll just touch on some of the notes that I've made through the questions that were posed by the committee members. Going on to page one, the introduction is very much similar to the CGE. We'll go to the entity overview. The NYC was very much a policy type of entity in terms of developing the integrated national youth policy and then obviously liaising with similar bodies who have similar objectives. It was during the 2008-09 financial year where the idea of the NYDA was mooted, and on the 16th of June 2009, the State President on Youth Day announced the establishment of the National Youth Development Agency. And in terms of Act Number 58 of 2008, it should read, the NYDA was formed, which is basically a merger of the NYC and the Umsumbumbu Youth Fund. The Umsumbumbu Youth Fund was not audited by the Auditor General. They were audited by a private firm of auditors. Thereafter, on the 5th of March 2010, there was a government gazette which now made into effect the last few transitional provisions that were still outstanding. So in effect, the NYC now ceases to exist. It's the NYDA who we will be auditing now, and the NYC audit will be the last audit that we will be doing for the 2010 financial year. Thereafter, the NYC ceases to exist. What we have done then on pages 3 and 4 is because the structure of the entire organization has changed, where the National Youth Commission, the terms of the commission is actually came to an end after the last financial year, during the last audit report on the 31st of July, the terms of the commissioners had ended, and there's no senior involvement now of those individuals at the NYC. So in effect, the NYDA is very much the old Umsumbumbu Youth Fund. There's no management of NYC that's involved at all in the NYDA. So therefore, we've given you an organizational structure on pages 3 and 4. Page 3 was the NYC as it existed at 31 March 2009. And subsequent to that, you will see now that sort of the NYDA board has taken over like a caretaker type of responsibility over the NYC just to wind up the organization and to see it to its end. In terms of funding, it was very much reliant on the presidency. It received an allocation of 24 million rand from the presidency during the 2009 financial year. The effectiveness of the audit committee and internal audit, what we're saying is that the structures were there. There was an audit committee and there was an internal audit function. However, the environment had deteriorated over the years, starting from an unqualified opinion in the years gone by, eventually to a qualified, and then to a disclaimer. So in other words, the environment had become progressively worse. And the last two financial years, that's 2008 and then 2009, they received disclaimers of audit opinions. In other words, very much similar to the CGE, you know, limitation of scope, unavailability of supporting documentation, etc. The auditors could not do their work, so therefore disclaimer of audit opinions. What we're saying is that the audit committee was there, the internal audit was there, they had fulfilled their mandate in terms of the work that they had to do, but because of the lack of cooperation, of the change in management, there were three CEOs and four CFOs during the financial year. It was very difficult for them to actually exercise in a proper manner their oversight responsibilities. Then on page 6, we give you the basis of accounting, which is exactly the same as the CGE, GAAP, and GRAP. And then on page 7, going on to page 8, which I'm not going to go into detail, we've just given you an oversight or some type of a variance analysis on the major variances between the two financial years as to why the revenue has increased, why has the bank balance, debtors, etc. Then very much similar to the CGE again, if you strip out the personnel expenditure, you could say more than 25% of the expenditure was found to be irregular. In other words, again, non-compliant with supply chain management prescripts. That's about four and a half million rand worth of irregular expenditure was disclosed. Then, going on to page 9 and page 10, we very much summarized the audit reports over the past 3 years for your information without giving you too much of detail, because the 2009 audit report was about 10 pages. So we just did it in the form of a table where you are able to come up with, you know, the conclusion as to very much whatever the auditors had touched had, you know, had led to qualified or to disclaimers. I mean, almost every account balance that we audited in terms of the financial statements formed part of this of the disclaimer of audit opinion paragraphs. And the root cause of that was lack of proper management, lack of oversight by those charged with governance, which is your board, or in other words, you're the commissioners. And also to the extent that where the entire amount of 24.3 million was treated as irregular expenditure in the books of the presidency. And it was emphasized in their audit report, because specifically on section 38.1J, which, as was mentioned, the constitutional institutions are exempt from that, but the NYC, being a public entity, actually falls within the ambit of that section. So in other words, presidency also had a responsibility to exercise some oversight before transferring the funds to make sure that they are in a proper controlled processes, etc. So if you look at the presidency annual report, the entire 24.3 million was treated as irregular expenditure, specifically because of non-compliance with legislation. I mean, on the performance information, every procedure that we had performed, if you go into the audit report, you will find that there's findings under each and every heading on that. So therefore, we haven't detailed to you the exact matters, but the headings of all of them: lack of reporting on all predetermined objectives inconsistent between strategic plan and annual report, unavailability of supporting documentation to provide credibility to the information that's provided, etc. So there are many findings also on the performance information. And going on to page 10, we actually give you the root cause just above point 9, that there was lack of continuous senior leadership, three CEOs, four CFOs, and a generally weak internal control environment, because there was just no information that we were able to audit, and ineffective oversight and governance, and as I said, it was both internally as well as on the part of the presidency. And just to give you some insight as to where we expect the audit report to go in terms of the 2009-10 financial year, we do not expect any change. In other words, based on the information and based on the procedures that we have performed to date, it is expected that the NYC will still be disclaimed in the 2009-10 financial year. And the main reason there being is that the entire management of the NYC has now moved on. The management of the previous Umsumumu Youth Fund, which has now sort of taken over the NYDA, is responsible now for the audit. And obviously, I mean, people who don't know where the information is, etc., are not going to be able to provide the assurance that the auditors need. So we expect that the situation will not turn around. But having said that, this will be the last audit because the NYC Act has now been repealed and the entity now ceases to exist. So this will be the last audit that we will be undertaking at the NYC. We will now just be focusing on the NYDA in the future. Then interventions with management. Throughout the audit process, we had engaged management. We had engaged the audit committee. The audit committee had written letters to the minister in the presidency, and as we're saying, all that culminated in the entire transfer payment being regarded as irregular in the books of the presidency, because despite knowing that there were issues, the money sort of continued to be transferred to the NYC, and therefore it was categorized as irregular. So that was the action that was taken on the part of the presidency in respect of the transfer payments. So that's the presentation. I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much. I think it's almost similar to the CGE. But what is said on our part is that we no longer have the NYC to question. That is the sad part. Members, do you have anything to say? Honorable Kekana?
Yes, Chair, something I don't understand. Umsobovu's CEO was here, and he told us they got a clean audit report. Now, what I don't understand is the disclaimer, when did it come? At the time when there was info of Umsobovu, or it only came after the transfer from Umsobu to the new structure. The second point about this thing that is still expecting a disclaimer, I just want to understand, I mean, this is a new financial year. They are starting, if you forget the past on a clean sheet. I mean, if money has been allocated to them in April, and you're going to audit them at the end of the year, this is a new amount. Can't you do something about this new amount and ensure that proper internal auditing controls are there and, you know, ultimately you don't get the disclaimer? I just find it a bit clear that we can foresee a disaster. There's a big pit there, and we're walking into the same path towards that pit, and we say, no, we're just going to fall into this bottomless pit. There's nothing we can do. I'm saying there is a new financial year, and they've been allocated money. Can't we make sure that we control that money properly so that at the end they get a clean audit?
Second question.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know from Ms. Esau, you made mention of the fact that the Umsobomvu Fund was not audited by the AG, but private. Why is that? Yeah.
Can we check as to what would happen to the previous NYC staff? Now they are now, some of them are now operating in the NYDA.
I will kick off with the one question, and then my colleague will give you responses to the other. On the question on why the Umsobomvu Youth Fund were not audited by the Auditor General, tradition, until a couple of years ago, before the Public Audit Act was enabled, there were entities that were not, in terms of the constitution, audited by the Auditor General. So the Youth Fund was one of them. Then the Public Audit Act was enacted, and it's got a specific section in which gives the Auditor General now the mandate to audit all those entities that do receive public funds. The Auditor General, then, in terms of his powers, can then give approval to entities to still appoint their own auditors. So there's now a process in place where the Auditor General can audit those institutions that are not necessarily the auditor of the institutions. What happens in the case now of the NYDA, the Auditor General is the auditor, and it's different now. So there was a change in legislation, and there was a process of addressing those issues.
Thanks, Chair. I think on the issue of the Umsumbumbu Youth Fund audit report and the NYC audit report, Mr. Kekana was the CEO of the Umsumbumbu Youth Fund, which was a separate entity, and the National Youth Commission was a completely separate entity. Management was different, the commissioners here were different, so everything was different. The Umsumbumbu Youth Fund audit report was unqualified, it is clean. It was the National Youth Commission that we're talking about that received this type of disclaimer of audit opinion. So there are two separate audit reports. In terms of the staff, the senior staff have all moved on. So the staff that are sitting now at the NYDA are not senior staff. In other words, your CFOs, CEOs, etc., they've all moved on. They've gone into other jobs. It's the more lower level staff that have been taken over by the NYDA. And in terms of the NYDA Act, the staff of the NYC have to be taken over on the same terms and conditions that they were at the NYC. But I mean, the NYC was a very small organization. I think in total the staff were about 60. So there are not many staff to be taken over, but the staff responsible, we could say, in terms of supervision, directing, etc., are no longer involved now. Okay, I think we've covered the staff issue, we've covered the URF and the NYC. Okay, the reason why we actually sort of are preempting in terms of the 09-10 financial year, that the same sort of audit outcome will be realized, is that if the information was not there in the past, a lot of the information that we audit in terms of contracts, donor fund agreements, etc., it's agreements or contracts that have been entered into in the past. And if the information could not be obtained in the past financial year, when the people who were involved in those agreements were there, then we do not expect that people who had no involvement will be able to find those documentation. So therefore, what we're saying is, and during our interim audit procedures, I mean, a standard response was, we don't know where the documentation is. In other words, if there's no documentation, then there's no way that we are able to obtain sufficient and appropriate audit evidence. However, in terms of the funds, the presidency is now transferring the funds to the NYDA. The NYC, in effect, once 31 March 2009 had arrived, everyone could see that the merger is going to happen. And what happened then was, the NYC basically didn't do much activities from April 2009. It was just the transfer payment and the payment of the salaries. They did not undertake any projects or any operational activities. So in effect, the operations of the NYC sort of started ceasing from 1 April 2009, and then the funds started being transferred to the NYDA. So, because what had also happened was, the senior staff had started to leave from 1 April 2009, after the last financial year. And so all the transactions and all the objectives, etc., are now being conducted under the NYDA. So from 30th September 2009, there's been no activity at all. However, from 1 April 2009, the activity started to cease, and then on 30th September, everything has now moved on to the NYDA.
Thank you very much. You know, when one looks at the root causes that she has mentioned, some of them are just simple procedures that needs to be followed. And one just wonders, why can't this be done before the mess? Because some of them are just simple things, following up of policies and procedures. What is the reason for that? And how, what can we do, you know, to stop the mess, you know?
Chairperson, yes, I think it's a valid observation, and that's why we've also, in our new audit report, at the bottom of the audit report, we will have the heading internal control, and under that heading, we will have three subheadings: leadership, governance, and financial management. That will once again, in terms of an audit perspective, give you a historical view of the root cause, but it will assist you in going forward to really understand, is it a leadership issue, is it a governance issue? I think in the case of the NYC, one can summarize it as maybe a leadership issue, because if there were strong leadership that were focused on governance, you know, the processes would have internally been put in place to make sure that the controls are there. And if you look at them, the continuous change in leadership, that's normally what happens in one of the things that can go wrong in an environment where there's continuous change in leadership.
No, thank you very much. But I think as a committee, it also gives us a challenge, you know, to call these entities and check whether all these are in place. As a committee, we also need to do that. It just gives us more work and a challenge. I mean, we cannot really shift the blame to somebody else to check, are your recruitment policies being adhered to, your procurement policies, are you following what you're supposed to do? I think we do have a right as this committee to do that as well, to these entities. Because after all, they do account to us. On that note, can we then say thank you very much to the AG's office? Let us not keep you. I'm not sure whether the NYDA, do you want to say something? No. For now, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. It was an honor to engage with you.
Not to the NYDA.
No,
not to you.
Your name, Judy.
Members, can we quickly run through? NYDA, can you come forward, please? Members, did you receive a copy of the NYDA's plan? Do you have it with you? Yes. Of the report. You know, members, before we start, I have a bit of a problem with this. NYDA, you have your targets set out very clear. Let me give one example. So, you know, when you say value of loans disbursed to young entrepreneurs and so forth, 10,000. The 10,000, that is your target. But where is the budget to do all this? Do you have it? Do you get my point?
Thank you for the opportunity. I thought that at the last reporting session that we came to do, we're going to be called again to come up with a much more detailed and even the senior leadership of our organization. Because I think ours, we are dealing with a monitoring parliament and also lies between the agency and parliament. So I might not give a detailed kind of budget or corporate plan, but I thought I was still going to be given an opportunity to come again and to do that kind of detailed report.
What is your view? As we need to adopt this report, but I'm just a bit, but mainly also we were going to speak on the concerns at the back of the page, I think. The concerns that we had raised. But one of the main concerns also is that your targets are not aligned to a budget. That is a bit problematic for us. I thought perhaps today you'd bring that along. Can we engage on the concerns that were raised? On the book, can you?
There has been very serious concerns raised about, for example, the very issue that they might still get a disclaimer. This is NYDA that has been spoken about, isn't it? Now, if they are not going to help us address those concerns, maybe they should rather come back. Because the last time when they were here, we didn't get that impression. I think they told us they've got a turnaround strategy, that things are going to work well, and ultimately they'll have a clean audit. Now, if auditors are already alarming us, raising a red flag and saying, no, things are not in order, you're going to get a bad report, and they can't tell us how they are going to turn things around today because they don't have a budget, and they are not going to show us how they are going to use that budget correctly. Maybe we should rather say they should come back later, unless if they are confident they can address the issues that the auditors I mean, our job is oversight. And if they think they can address those concerns raised about our oversight, then I don't see why we should continue the meeting. We can ask them if they feel they can address it, they can show us how, they can go ahead and say later they'll come and confirm it with a proper budget outline. Thanks.
Mam hasa jutro. And second. Honorable Dorothy and Honorable Robinson.
Chair, in terms of the concerns that were raised, I think we really expect them to actually address those concerns, amongst which is that you highlighted, especially 8.2, where it says where, you know, we require a strategic plan for the MTF along with the budget that indicates how funds will be spent accordingly.
There was a hand. Honourable Robinson and Honourable Macher.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to echo what was said by my colleague at Kagana and also the other lady, Mrs. Romadibe. We've been given the indication that things are going to go wrong. We want them to go right. But what indication are you giving us? There's still so many questions. We've had the targets and the budget not being aligned. I'm, for example, interested, you know, the values of the loans issued to young entrepreneurs. Sure, we want to issue loans. But I would like to know, for example, what are the terms and conditions? What is going to tell us that things are going to be running properly this time? I've got a question on page 4. We're going to establish an NYDA alumni society. That sounds awfully grand, like a big university. But what is it going to be? What is the purpose? What are the activities? What are the costs? We're just told there are 10 structures. Is this going to be more money down the drain? Is it actually going to be something that is meaningful, that is going to be working for young people and assisting, or is it just going to be a top dressing? Popularizing, just lower down under 6, popularizing the African Youth Charter and the National Youth Policy. 500,000 copies printed and distributed. But what does that actually mean? Does that mean somebody's put it into a little file somewhere or the paper's just been thrown away? To whom has it been distributed? Has it gone widely? Has it gone to all the people in South Africa, not just into small pockets or here, there, or everywhere? I'd like to know that the distribution is general. So I have some big concerns about this, and I tend to think that I hope you can give us the answers. If not, then we must have people who can give us the answers, because we can't have the same sort of disasters happening as happened with the previous body. Thank you.
Chairperson, I'm looking at our concerns raised. And now my problem with this meeting is we have 2 officials from the NYDA. And remember with 8.2, they said to us when they were sitting here that they do have a strategic plan. They actually opened their computer. And we said we want it within 7 days. And it's problematic to me when we speak to the officials. We need to have the senior officials of the presidency here. You know, that we can give them the instructions. Because we're going to have this problem each time when the National Youth Agency comes to us. Because they can't make decisions while they are here. It's only our top officials that can make the decisions. So I think whatever we're doing here is defeating the purpose of what we really want to do. Without having, like, a top official will be the DG of the presidency, or the person in charge of this program. You know, where it falls, and the person, I want to speak to the minister, by the person that's under the minister, you know, on that respective side that's supposed to be in this meeting. Thank you.
You know, I think as a committee, we have done some little bit of work for you as the NYDA. Just take the document, check our concerns, and try to address them. And link your and give us the budget for your program. That's all. It's not much.
The officials are taking these concerns back. But my feeling is that these concerns have to go to whoever's in charge, you know, of, I think it's Program 3. They fall under Program 3, the monitoring. So if there's a deputy DG in monitoring and evaluation, then this copy with a covering letter has to go to them too. Because when they come back with their answers, it must be signed by the person in charge. Thank you.
Just a minute.
Oh.
No, I'm just being alerted to that. By the way, the president's vote is on the 12th of May, which then tells us that we need that information before the 12th. You understand? You get the point?
Yes.
Thanks, then. On that note, can we formally close the meeting? Or before we close? Nothing comes easy. Okay.
Thank you.